Goodness gracious, ladies and gentlemen, we are here to talk about WWE's Great Balls of Fire. It's here, it's loud, it's live, it's next.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
We're doing it, guys. We're talking about it.
Yes, they did it. They pulled the trigger. Great Balls of Fire. Was it a great ball of success? That's the question.
That's what we're here to talk about. Nine matches, eight announced. We're going to break them all down. I'm your host, Steve Kaufman. You can find me on Twitter, at Steve Kaufman. That is K-A-U-F-M-A-N-M, but I'm not alone. I am full strength here, starting my immediate left. The newest member of the pay-per-view panel, Denise Dazeo.
The new and official member now. So,
yes.
Yeah, we made that. Thank you,
since
by the way.
When?
Like
you were on a group text.
A few weeks ago. Group text. All right, anyways, but you guys can find me on Twitter and Instagram at @DeniseSalcedo.
And to her left, representing the Raw panel.
Raw and NXT and the most seasoned veteran of AfterBuzz Wrestling, I think. I am the True Hobo, at True Hobo on Twitter. If you don't know who I am, I've worked for Raw, SmackDown, NXT, ROH, New Japan, just about everything under the sun, wrestler for 8 years now, and I've got all of what?
You still a hobo?
Yeah. Everybody in LA is a big fat phony. They wear a suit and live out of a suitcase. I am quintessential Los Angeles. I'm just honest about it. That's it.
It's not a financial choice, it's a life choice.
Absolutely. Minimal positions. I travel my life with as little Klingon as possible. Can you say the same, George Hermosa?
Not yet, but can you say that your face is on a great ball of fire, apparently?
No, I cannot.
That graphic until like right now. Where, by the way, Steve, your eyes are lovely.
My eyes are lovely in real life, but they were a little, the blue was a little popped.
Gentlemen viewers, if your balls ever look like that, please consult your physician immediately.
And I am George Hermosa, GHERMOZA. You can follow me on Twitter, Instagram, and all the rest of the social media.
So let's dive right into it. How are we feeling about this not bad blood pay-per-view?
I think that I have a love-hate relationship with this pay-per-view. There were some moments that were like, ugh, and then there were some moments where I was like, yeah, oh my God, that's awesome. And that's how I feel about it overall.
Vast majority, I'd say this was a success. It has a ridiculous name, and they kind of leaned into it. Like anything else in wrestling, if it's ridiculous, you can't say, well, this is dumb, I'm not going to do it. You got to go all the way with it. And Jerry Lee Lewis, they played. So, yeah, I think this was a success, and they wanted to replace Bad Blood. Well, there was still blood on the show, so Bad Blood, it still was. Great Balls of Fire, indeed, it was there as well.
I thought it was an overall really good pay-per-view, and a nice little knock out of the park. I liked the vignettes, the like little coming attraction kind of things that you saw and you know on the Raw and SmackDown. And I thought it was really, really cool. Something different they haven't really done in a while. They've done maybe something similar, but not that kind of drive-in kind of feel to it. I really liked it.
I wanted to be very pessimistic, but I was actually, like, once I got over, like, the ridiculousness of the name, they leaned into it, and it was fine. It was great.
I think that kind of, they do that a lot, where they kind of set the, like, expectations low, because they know they're going to have a good pay-per-view. I think if it was, like, some cool pay-per-view name, like, oh my God, it's got to be good. That was not a Hobro impression. But, I don't know, I thought it was kind of close. But, yeah, I mean, I thought the name kind of, you know, was offset by just a really, really good pay-per-view.
The lower the expectations you have about any particular thing, the greater the payoff you're going to have overall. So if you think it's going to be bad, it might surprise you, and I think we were all pleasantly surprised tonight.
Definitely.
It's funny because, like, kind of going back to what you said, right after the draft, everybody was like, well, Raw stacked. That's obviously going to be the best show, you know, and then, you know, week after week, everybody kept saying that SmackDown was the best show.
Yeah, and I think comparing it to SmackDown Live and Raw, I would argue this was a better show than Money in the Bank. Which, and I think part of it's an expectations thing, that Money in the Bank, we walked in having a preset expectation of what Money in the Bank is and isn't. Whereas this one, it's Great Balls of Fire. It's the first one ever. We're not even really sure what that is.
I think kind of going back to what I said, maybe like when the draft first started, where you had Backlash, you had No Mercy. Those pay-per-views were really, really good, as opposed to the Raw pay-per-views, which were like Night of Champions and Hell in a Cell, where like you kind of were forced to do certain matches just because of the name of the actual event, where you had Great Balls of Fire, where you're not really forced to do really anything. You can do whatever match you want to do, hence kind of more freedom to do certain things like, you know, this pay-per-view.
Yeah, you weren't really sure what to expect. Like you said, some, like, for example, Money in the Bank. We know we're going to be seeing Money in the Bank matches. You know, TLC, whatever. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you really didn't know what to expect with this one. But honestly, I thought overall it was a pretty good show. I agree with you guys.
And it's gonna be fun. Speaking of the show, the pre-show. We all saw the pre-show match. It started out with Akira Tozawa with Titus O'Neil facing off against the King of the Cruiserweights, Neville, for the Cruiserweight Championship.
You got to say, like, Neville.
Neville?
No, you got to say the King of the Cruiserweights like Neville would say King of the Cruiserweights.
Well, I was just trying to get through the copy. Okay. The King of the Cruiserweights! I can do it! I just, you know, just kind of brings the whole room down. These guys had a great match. I always love this Cruiserweight action. And if Titus O'Neil is what we need, if Titus O'Neil is what they think we need to get more Cruiserweight action, I'm okay with him too.
Honestly, this match was way better than I had originally expected. I thought the crowd was really into it, first of all. And then I actually thought Tozawa had it a few times. I thought, like, oh, man, if he does get the bout, like, this would be so cool. Like, they can do so much awesome stuff with the Titus brand and, you know, really make it work. So, honestly, great pre-show match.
Tozawa's a real competitor, always has been. If there's anybody who can bring it to Neville, it's Tozawa. Unfortunately, he wasn't able to pull out the win due to some, you know, questionably ethical decisions on the part of the champion, which may or may not result in another match coming down the line.
I really liked the match. I thought it was good back and forth. Like you said, Dallas was really, really hot today. In terms of, I'm sure, temperature, but in terms of the crowd as well. But yeah, again, it kind of goes back on Dallas really always has a good crowd overall. We saw Survivor Series 2014 was in Dallas with the whole 5-on-5 Authority versus Ziggler and Cena. Obviously, WrestleMania, that was a hot crowd. And yeah, tonight was no different. And really started off great with, you know, a good pre-show match, which I always say, I think in some ways you kind of want to be on the pre-show match because you kind of have a little bit more freedom to kind of have go a little bit more over. You're not really like, all right, guys, you know, we don't need to go to the next match because it's, you know, it's still...
Well, let me tell you, that's not true. You always want to be on time no matter where you are, but I will say when you're starting off the show, the audience is hungry for anything.
Yeah.
So they're willing to eat up the first thing that comes along. If you're the first match of the night, they are guaranteed to be hot. Mm-hmm. There's no wrong way to really enjoy a hot crowd. You go out there, you're the first ones there, and they're just naturally hot. Enjoy it. Have fun out there. And kick each other's asses.
And this wasn't one of those pre-show matches where they go on way too early in the hour that people aren't in their seats yet. This match happened at about 4:45, 4:50 our time. So everyone was in their seats ready for the show. So they had a hot crowd. No one was shuffling to their seats, getting popcorn, settling in. Like, everyone was settled in, and they settled into this match.
I'm sure this is a high-profile... No, I'm not sure. This was a high-profile match where I'm sure a lot of, like... If I was a kid kind of going into these events, I'd be like, Dad, Mom, let's hurry up. The Cruiserweight title match is going to start. Like, so I'd want to be there just so I can make sure I at least get a title match in because you never know when the title might change. You don't want to miss it, you know, just in case if it were to change hands.
Now, the question becomes, did anyone expect any change in the Cruiserweight division given the news of Austin Aries?
I think that had nothing to do with it. I think just Neville is just so good that I didn't think of him losing the belt anytime soon.
Like, Neville is what they want right now, so Neville is what it is. Austin Aries, whatever happened between him and the company, maybe he asked for time off, maybe he didn't. I don't think it affects this storyline directly in any particular way, but I think the division as a whole kind of took a hit. He was a heavy hitter. He had everything. He was the entire package, a real package deal, and unfortunately he's going to be bringing his services to other companies. Mm-hmm. But he could potentially be back. Yeah. The door is never, ever shut.
And he didn't leave on terrible terms. He asked for his release. They said sure.
Yeah.
That's the rumor.
Well, yeah, that's the way we're being told it happened.
Yeah, well,
I believe it, and yeah. I believe it.
Well, you know, not just sidetrack everybody from the pay-per-view, but, you know, from what I've heard, you know, Austin was, you know, wanting to leave. He was very unhappy. He was pissed that he wasn't included in the Mania DVD, which that screws him out of royalties, mm-hmm. which obviously, you know, it matters for all wrestlers, you know. So whether or not he left on good terms, you know, I don't know for sure. But I am a little sad to see Austin go. But at the same time, I am very excited to see where this is going to take him.
I was very sad to see him leave, but at the same time, if the narrative we're all hearing in the past couple days is true, it sounds like he feels he was too big for the cruiserweight division that they pigeonholed him to. I don't know if that's a fair, accurate description of the whole situation, but that's how he felt. That's how he felt given the storyline we're following.
I know Austin Aries. That being said, I will not try and speak to his mental state. I will only say that he is one of the very best at cruiserweights, heavyweights, any division he decides to put himself into. He is one of the very best, and his absence will be felt.
Definitely. Because pre-show matches like this with Neville, if, let's say, Akira Tozawa got hurt yesterday, and Austin Aries was still with the company, Austin Aries would be able to go with Neville immediately.
Yeah. Him or Cedric Alexander, I mean, I think he's been paired up as well with him on house shows. I think, if anything, he's probably going to be the next guy to probably take it down to, or try to take Neville's belt off, you know.
But speaking of trying to take Neville's belt off, we run a bit of a predictions competition here. It's called the AfterBuzz TV Predictions Championship. These numbers are from that championship, by the way. It's at ABTVPPVChamp on Twitter. We will announce a winner at the end of tonight. 12.3% of them thought it would be Akira Tozawa. 2.8% thought it would be some type of no contest. And 84.9% thought correctly that it would be the king of the cruiserweights, Neville. Good job on predicting there. You didn't really miss a beat on this one. But now we jump on into the main show, which starts us off with Bray Wyatt and Seth Rollins. A match. I don't think they did they get enough time on TV heading into this match? I'm trying to recount all the Raws.
I think they did. I think they had a fair amount of time. I mean, it was a pretty nice match to watch. I had a good time. Again, the crowd was in it, and I think that Bray Wyatt winning was probably the right call.
So, I mean, speaking of numbers, there was a tweet sent out with a graphic that had all of Bray Wyatt's wins, losses, and draws, and he has got, like, some ridiculous 3-1, 3.5-4-1 loss-over-win ratio. He does not have a good record. And for a guy who is as both devastating and frightening as he is supposed to be, it does not help him at all to not be able to seal the deal when it comes to pay-per-views and just matches in general. That being said, the fact that he got the win tonight helps him immensely. Seth Rollins calls himself the King Slayer, and I think Bray Wyatt was able to put him in his place. And this, I think, it's a good thing to see Seth Rollins with an opponent like Bray Wyatt. He's devastatingly quick and massive. He's like a bear. No, really. The first time I saw him in person, I was like, that man is absolutely built like a truck, and he moves just as fast. So dangerous. So the fact that he was able to get the win over Rollins tonight makes Rollins look really good and makes Wyatt look fantastic.
I think they got enough TV time, too. I just didn't like the way it started, kind of like, oh, Wyatt saying that Rollins mentioned his name and now there's going to be a beef. Like, I would have liked to have been a lot more serious than that. Maybe even going back to the Shield Wyatt's days where we kind of saw them kind of go back and forth. I think anything would make sense if it stems from that original feud. So I feel like you don't have to sit there and say, like, oh, well, you mentioned my name, so I'm going to come after you.
Or if you grounded it in something that you make up that Luke Harper's life isn't great right now. You just make that up right now, and Seth Rollins says, I knew Luke Harper down in NXT. Really don't appreciate the shambles you left him in. And then that's all you need to start. That maybe he mentions Bray Wyatt, and then the same thing starts there. But I do like the subtlety to this program. That it's just a lot of, like, I was about to say didacting, but, like, didacting is talking. Talking. It's a lot of talking.
Well, okay, hold on. I have a funny. Well, maybe not a funny, but during the entrances, was I the only person that was like, haha, Bray Wyatt and JoJo are in the ring together. Like, let's all laugh. Was I the only person who thought that was funny?
I didn't think about that.
No, really?
I think everyone as a whole thinks that's pretty awful. Nobody wins. Lives are ruined forever. Don't generally laugh at that.
I was the only person
okay.
then.
You're right, they were in the ring together. Speaking of
I'm sure they're in a lot of other places together too. But I mean I thought it was a good match. I thought it was a good opening. I mean, if you want to appreciate and then you have your actual opening match. I thought it was pretty good, you know, not your best opening match ever, but I mean it's going to be hard to compare against Brett and Owen or, you know, Bryan versus Triple H, but like this was really really good. Two guys that can just go all the way and just I thought it was really really good for what it was.
They told a story, nobody looked weak. Heading into this match, only 35.8% thought it would be Bray Wyatt.
That speaks to the numbers.
Yeah.
Really, it does.
It speaks to the ability. Like, this came off as a bit of a shocking. Like, on the Twitterverse, it came off as like, oh my God, Bray Wyatt won a pay-per-view match. Because whether it is or isn't, that comes off as rare to us. Because Bray Wyatt is a very Jake the Snake-esque character where he doesn't necessarily need to win.
He doesn't get the win. I think he needs the win.
Yeah.
But he definitely doesn't get it. But he was able to pull it off tonight, and that's all that matters. You win tonight. He was smarter than Seth Rollins, purely. And he is. Rollins is sort of a shadowy figure in his own right, but Bray Wyatt has the plan. And he executed it tonight when he had the opportunity. He went right to that eyeball, tried to pluck that eye right out of his head, and then was able to capitalize on top of that, and that was the win. He's a smart man. He should get more wins if he's smart enough. That's the story that I have to believe. That's what doesn't add up. If he's as smart as he says he is, he ought to get the win. He got it tonight, but overall, he just isn't able to close the deal.
I think the argument with Bray Wyatt always was that he was so smart he doesn't value the win like everyone else does. It gets muddled when he starts winning championships, but that's only a recent development.
Right.
Before that, it made complete sense. It was like, oh, he doesn't care if he wins, necessarily.
Because even going back to his match with Undertaker, kind of the buildup was like, you know, him being the new face of the Fear, but even after he lost to Undertaker, he still considered himself the new face of Fear.
Mm-hmm.
It just, it kind of goes back on what you're saying, where like, you know, maybe it doesn't matter to him. He just wants to be there and wreck havoc and cause chaos.
But if you... No one believes the loser.
I agree with you.
History is written
by the winner. I want to see him win. But I think in terms of Bray Wyatt, I don't think it matters to him as much as it maybe it should.
Mm. But that's the wonderful thing about his character. Also, 63.2% Seth Rollins. Decent favorite to not win the match.
I thought he was going to pick it up. I thought he would just be a step ahead of Wyatt, but that was not the case.
Especially for this month, just getting into like prognosticating, it's the month they put him on the cover of a video game. Or they announced he's on the cover of a video game. Like, that's something that you could work towards. But moving on, we got Big Cass versus Enzo Amore. This match was 5 minutes 25 seconds. Enzo Amore's promo up top, 6 minutes 30 seconds.
Well, I think it goes
it was a great promo.
I think going back onto like Monday, and I'm sure you talked about it on Monday, where it's like, man, Enzo was just like his promo, man. Like, it's one thing for him to have his promos, you know, from NXT going up to 2-3 weeks ago, two months ago. But, man, like, the last 2-3 weeks, his promos, like, I can't believe how good this guy is. You always knew he was good, but you didn't know how really good he is until these past few weeks.
Well, I did. Because I've been covering NXT for the last, I don't know, 3 years. 4 years. 4 years I've been covering NXT. So I know the abilities of both Enzo and Cass, and individually. There was a time in NXT when Enzo broke his foot and Cass was left to his own devices because Enzo was laid up in a wheelchair. He couldn't make it down to the ring. I knew watching Cass on his own in NXT that he would be completely fine without Enzo. There wasn't any sort of missed step. He was able to figure himself out as a singles wrestler and how to work a mic like a real champion. He's learned a lot from Enzo. Enzo is obviously the mouthpiece. There's obviously, from this match, there's no argument to the contrary. But it's rubbed off on him, and he's able to talk if he wants to. That being said, Enzo's the heart. And that is what we saw in this match. I don't think Enzo has any idea, or rather, he doesn't cast any aspersions about his place with the company. He knows he's small. He knows he is sort of underskilled. And for that reason, he knows that he is always, perpetually, on the chopping block.
Yeah. Mm.
So if he did not get the win tonight, he knew it would not help his position with the company at all. And it was sad to see him lose, and in such a fashion, because now you really do worry about him. But maybe that's the best thing anyone can do for him, is worry about him, and express emotion both online and with your dollars. Buy a shirt. Well, you still can, because you don't know how much longer he's going to be with the company. I mean, it's not like he can go to the cruiserweights and start flipping around. He can't do it. He just can't.
I don't know. I respectfully disagree. I think the last week, and or I guess you can say six, seven days, like the heart and passion you saw with Enzo Amore, like there was something just maybe magical in his voice. You know, just maybe something more, like as far as like, he made the crowd really love him. They liked him a lot. They liked him a lot. You know, he got the pop. He got the, you know, the crowd reaction. But now they love him to the point where they hate Big Cass. Like, he's not that cool heel that, oh, my God, he turned on his boy, you know, now we're going to cheer him. We're kind of, no. They hate Big Cass, which makes them love, you know, Enzo
like
even more.
Heel,
and they love, you know, Enzo, where they hate Big Cass even more. I think it's a perfect dynamic. Obviously, I don't want to see a year-long feud with these guys, but I really think that Enzo's safe and shows the last week how safe he is. Or maybe you were right up until 6 days ago, where he knew he was on the chopping block, and I was like, you know what? I'm going to deliver some promos of my life. And I think he delivered in the last 6 days.
Well, here's the thing, too. Obviously, we all know that, hey, when they break these two guys up, it's going to be Big Cass who they are going to push to the moon. And, you know, everybody was saying, like, hey, you know, what's going to happen with Enzo? This is the end of his career. You know, that's why people are making fun of him when he shed that one tear, because he knows this is the end of his career. But I definitely see what you mean, that after, you know, even though they're pushing for Big Cass, the crowd is behind Enzo Amore. Like, they love Enzo. I love Enzo. Everyone loves Enzo. But now... And here I was thinking the same thing, like, oh, because, you know, he's been doing so well, you know, he's been doing so well, like, always, that he's still going to continue to get pushed. But after today and the fact that he had no, like no defense or anything today, like, they just completely, like, it was a match that I didn't want to see for Enzo.
You can only argue this, like, this doesn't hurt Enzo because we all want to see Enzo. And because we all want to see Enzo, we're going to get to see Enzo. If we didn't respond so well for him, this would be a huge problem for him. And I think the fact that WWE themselves keep making allusions to the barbershop window helps us because they don't want him to be they don't want one to be Sean and another to be Mart. Like, in spite of when they make that joke, like, a promotion doesn't want that to happen. They want to have two stars instead of one.
I have a sidebar, completely sidebar.
Of course.
Who's more successful, do you think, Marty Jannetty or Jim Neidhart?
Jim Neidhart.
You think Jim Neidhart more successful than Marty Jannetty?
I'd have to say Jim Neidhart, too.
Really?
Because Jim Neidhart's not the butt of any jokes.
Well, I mean...
just from that point of view.
Because what I was going to get, I was like, why did nobody ever say the Jim Neidhart of the group, you know? Because Marty Jannetty, former Intercontinental Champion, former Tag Team Champion, Jim Neidhart did nothing after, you know... Maybe a nice little run, in 97, but I don't, again, continue. My point is, I don't know why everybody picks on Marty Jannetty. Why I think they should pick on Jim Neidhart more than Jannetty.
Well, you look at, it's just the contrast. It was the fact that Shawn Michaels kicked him through the window. It could have been anybody else. And if their star didn't rise as high as Shawn Michaels, there wouldn't be the comparison. But because it was Shawn Michaels and he ended up here and Marty Jannetty ended up here, even that's a big enough difference.
But a lot
where
of people
can go.
A lot of people put Brett on the same level as Shawn.
Yeah.
But
right.
But Brett was always on the, I would argue Brett was always on that level, whereas Shawn was really a part of the Rockers. Until that moment.
Right, yes, exactly.
And that's really why it's in the zeitgeist of the barbershop window, is that Shawn Michaels broke away and became Shawn Michaels. And before that moment, they were the Rockers.
I think no matter what, he's still going to be the butt of the
joke. Oh, he always is. I'm just curious why nobody is brought up Nightmare.
I'm not joking against Marty. Marty's a great guy. Yeah. We're all the same. It's just the lexicon. It's how people view the situation, right or wrong.
I'm happy it happened, because I knew we weren't going to get through this match without talking about the barbershop window, because it's a very popular tag team breaking up. I also think we had a moment with Big Cass in the WWE when Enzo went down pretty soon after their call-up, when he tried to enter that tournament. He tried to enter that, like, world championship tournament. With Big Cass, like, and he came out and talked for himself. Like, Big Cass has been ready this whole time.
Oh, absolutely.
And he
he's always ready to go. And he's ready to go solo whenever they feel it's his time.
And he was on Raw Talk today and straight up talking about the Universal Championship.
And the best part about this turn is the fact that they didn't wait until the kind of fire was dying down. Like, the fire was still hot.
Yeah.
Like, you thought they were going to win the titles. Not you, obviously, but we all thought that they were going to win the titles maybe at Brooklyn and SummerSlam. You know, we all thought that they were going to be there. So the fact that they were able to do this when they were so at their peak, kudos to WWE.
Minus the Hardy Boys, I thought they were going to win at Mania. But the Hardy Boys weren't on the card.
You know what's funny? It's crazy that Hardy Boys were like already on the match, like on the card, like 3 weeks before.
Well, we know that now.
That's just so crazy.
But yeah, that it was a well kept
secret. Like the fact that, like, wait, we saw the signs. Wait, they made it a ladder match. I come in and hit us then, you know?
Well, see, now the question is for Enzo and Cass, well, specifically for Enzo, is how long is this feud going to last until the audience gets burned out, you know? Like, how many times can we, like, feel pity for Enzo? How many times can we, you know, see him get beat clean because, you know, obviously they're going to be pushing Big Cass more and more.
I think today was it.
Yeah, or, you think?
Or at the very least, tomorrow night they're across from each other in a tag match.
No.
And then it's over. This has to be it, and then you can always come back, but this has to be it, and they both need to move on to other things.
The thought in my head is, what match is going to be the equalizing force that gives Enzo Amore the opportunity to win? Not even like a fighting chance, like even a flash victory. I can't imagine Enzo winning, especially being beat this bad. You can add whatever layer onto a singles match you want. I think it will always come out with Big Cass being on top. That's just how you cut it. So my brain's going, where do we want to see Enzo Amore go from here? Because he's never going to beat Big Cass. It's just not going to happen. Unless something really crazy happens, which it could, but who knows. Where do we want to see Enzo go?
I honestly think Cruiserweight division. I think he would be the shot in the arm they keep looking for that Cruiserweight division to make people really want to watch 205 Live. I think putting him down there would be a good place to separate him from the cast of it all. But I also think he could face off against someone like Bo Dallas tomorrow and get a flash victory and then start stringing together some victories and start to look like a winning opponent.
Well, he needs something, that's for sure, because I don't want to see him, like, you know, disappear from the roster, you know? We want to see him in something, whether he's somebody's mouthpiece or, you know, what you said. Either
could be
way,
the Big Show's mouthpiece.
Exactly, but the point is we want to see him, and clearly the audience wants to see him, too.
Yeah. Also, we don't have the percents, but Enzo Amore was the underdog by a lot.
Surprise!
I know, right? Crazy. Moving on to match number 4, it is the Hardy Boys challenging the champions Cesaro and Sheamus in the first ever 30-minute Iron Man match for the tag team championships. Whew, these four guys.
This was a test, a real test of tag team wrestling and of the conditioning of both opponents. There was no point in this match where there was not some movement. There was no break. Everybody was constantly moving. I think this was a feast for the senses for the audience. Just getting to see constant motion and watching the Hardy Boys do what they do, be cohesive, but also being put to the test. The tag team champions right now are absolutely two of the most amazing specimens to ever be produced by WWE. They are as fit as any professional athletes on any sort of other surface you can imagine. So this was a test for the veterans, real, true veterans, the Hardy Boys.
I feel like had it not been for the last, 5 minutes of this match, this would have been my least favorite thing on the entire pay-per-view. Because I'm not going to lie, like, the first, you know, I don't know, like, 20-something minutes, I was bored. I'm not going to lie, I was bored. I was like, oh, come on, like, we have to see this. Like, come on, I want to see more, you know? But then towards the end, I was just like, wow, like, you know, everybody's got so much better. I was happy with the turnout of it all.
More than
the end.
What? Let's dive into that. You said you wanted to see more. More what? How much more action can you get?
I guess just more. To me, it was just a little bit slow. Like, for my personal taste. But, yeah.
It's
I ended up
minutes.
Liking
it's
it toward
marathon.
The end.
It's a marathon in today's wrestling.
I'm typically not a big fan of Iron Man matches. Not because I think Bret and Shawn had one of the best matches ever. It's just that from a wrestling fan, I hate knowing when I know the finish of a match is coming, you know. Just for that only reason. Other than that, you know, I think it's fine. But just the only reason why I don't like Iron Man matches. But with that said, I thought this match was absolutely fantastic. It kind of there were some moments in that match where I'm like, wait, this isn't Iron Man match. This is going to go like another 15 minutes. But it did kind of fly by, in my opinion. I think the fact that it was so good, you know, it was so, you know, always got its constant movement. They weren't like, it's an Iron Man match. I got time to, you know, walk around and look at my watch and whatever, whatever, you know. I think this match was a lot better than what I thought it was going to be. But yeah, I thought it was completely great. Better, probably their best match together they've had since they've, you know, gotten together in this program.
Yeah, I can get down with that. And I also like they went out of their way to make Cesaro and Sheamus blow a 3-1 lead. I think that they were making a Warriors joke just really late. Because the Warriors did that, I think, the NBA last year. But, like...
Sorry, Steve.
I'm not a fan. I just happened to notice that, like, numbers exist, like...
I watch wrestling.
I can help you there. I don't watch basketball. But either way, no. And that was also our first, blood moment with Matt Hardy when he was bleeding. I didn't catch that part where he was...
I haven't caught that part either.
It was right when he leans over and Cesaro hits him through the ropes.
Oh.
That's the moment it happens. I cannot tell, though, if it is his eyebrow or his ear.
I think I saw, like, a cut on his eyebrow.
Well, that's what I thought, too. But he keeps adjusting his jaw while the medical staff is looking at him. And I'm wondering if it was... his eardrum that maybe popped, which is way worse. Cut my eyebrow any day. Leave my ears alone.
Hard way all day. No, leave my ears alone.
Yeah. But there's not been any word of what his injury is, so we're just left scratching our heads and whatever else we got.
Someone on Twitter told me his skin was broken.
And I have... speaking of which, I have a little, I don't want to say beef, but something to kind of educate the fans out there. It's finger this way, delete. Because a lot of things that they're doing looks like they're kind of hailing something else. Just throwing it out there. Just be careful. Just be careful. It's something, you know, very late 30s, early 40-ish, you know? So just like, hey, it's finger straight across.
Right. It's shoulder to shoulder.
You know?
Shoulder to shoulder.
I know you might
don't
hit
go
your
like
person.
Ear to ear.
In no way.
Shoulder to
in no
shoulder.
Way is it angled upwards. Just throwing it out there. Anybody's listening that's watching, just be careful. Straight across.
That's
going
to be a gift tomorrow.
And keep it
guys.
Low. Keep it low. Yeah. You want it right about here.
Below your shoulder. Perpendicular.
Yeah. 45 degrees right about here.
Delete.
I think nothing the main
else.
Thing is the finger. The finger and
the
then
finger
delete.
The finger
but because, yeah, I think, yeah. So just be careful out there, WWE audience.
Be real careful out there. 30.2% thought it would be the Hardy Boys. 0.9% thought it would be some type of schmoz. And to be fair, a tie would have counted under that. And 68.9% were correct.
We don't really see many schmodges in
Cesaro and Sheamus. You got to leave the option, but they're typically uncommon.
Yeah, but the fact that it's maybe less than 1%, probably they knew that, hey, probably
it's
not going to happen.
It's a very less than likely thing. Moving on to the next match, which is... Alexa Bliss and Sasha Banks for the WWE Women's Championship. Huge fan of both of these ladies.
This match was so good. I loved it a lot. Honestly, I wasn't expecting as much, but when the match actually came through, I was like, oh my God, like I love these girls working together so much. And I absolutely love the finish because then that means we get to see more. And then that spot that they did afterwards was just, you know, it could have been really dangerous for both girls. You know, Alexa could have hit her head in the concrete or Sasha could have banged her knees or something, but they did it and, you know, it went well. And honestly, I really enjoyed this match and I can't wait to see these two girls continue.
Alexa Bliss has a particular skill. Mid-match, she's able to emote like one of the best absolute in the ring, and it makes you believe what's actually happening. You believe the anger, the frustration, the hatred that she has for her opponent, in this case Sasha Banks, and it draws you in. There's never a moment where she's taking anything lightly. This is life and death in the championship, and it means everything to her, so you have to respect her for that. You don't necessarily have to like her for the tactics that she employs, especially trying to walk away from the match, literally screaming, I don't need this! But you have to respect that this means everything to her. And she puts it all on the line, more or less.
But I do like that this means everything to her so much that if she catches a whiff that Sasha Banks might beat her, oh well, this means everything to me, why would I fight you?
Yeah.
Like, her character has that much logic.
She'd rather have the championship walking than lose it in a hard fight.
Or that's, possibly lose it. Like it.
Well, that's the kind of cowardice that we're dealing with. She'd rather be a champion on paper and lose it to retain it.
Mm.
That's exactly what she wants.
I had a lot of expectations for this match, and it did not disappoint. I think both people are such great. And then obviously Alexa Bliss, or Sasha, it goes without saying, we've all knew she can go for like the last 3-4 years, but Alexa, like, once again, like the kind of the dark horse of just everything in general, especially being drafted so low, you know, back in July, and just like you thought that she was just going to be somebody who they're going to try to groom and whatnot, and boom, within a few months, she's like probably the best woman in both Raw and SmackDown's women's division. So,
and was not the plan when they drafted her.
I don't know about that. Who knows? In NXT, she showed a lot of potential. A lot of the skills that we're seeing her employ now weren't as evident at the time, but you could see that there was a thought process there and that she at all times had a plan. And the smartest way to attain and keep a championship is with your brain. Not your heart, not your muscle, not your speed, but your actual God-given brain. So, for that, I thought, there's something very real here. It's hidden just beneath the surface because she's very small, and because she's small, she's not thought of as being, you know, particularly...
physical?
Aggressive. Mm. Like, she's very aggressive, but being able to capitalize in a fashion that actually causes damage is difficult. But when you're wrestling somebody like Sasha Banks, that's almost even footing. They're almost toe-to-toe exactly the same. So she's able to be both dastardly and vicious. And some of those shots that she had tonight, especially to Sasha's back and her neck, vicious, absolutely vicious. She has no problem almost taking out her opponent completely.
Mm.
Just does not care if they're able to make TV tomorrow. That shot to the back of the head especially, grab the hair, back of the head right under the knee. That's a concussion. So you got to be real careful. Alexa Bliss doesn't care. It's another day at the office for her. Another day as champion. She's going to keep the damn belt.
They're putting all the eggs in her basket on Raw, on the Raw women's side.
Rightfully so. Like I said, when she's the best woman maybe out there, and that says a lot. In
a world where Charlotte Flair exists.
I'm talking about even Raw, where like you have Sasha and Bayley, where kind of like, wait, I forgot that Bayley's, you know, it kind of makes you think like, wait, Bayley's on that division as well, you know? The fact that that's how good Alexa Bliss is, where it kind of makes you forget about other people, wrongfully so, because, you know, obviously they got a lot of good talent on that division. But again, like, and even early on where she got drafted, like, she got put in the main event scene in the women's division quickly because that first SmackDown pay-per-view, it was her and Becky.
Mm-hmm.
That's where we really got to see that, you know, Alexa Bliss can really, really go. And, you know, so again, kudos to her because, yeah, she's really stepped up.
Yeah, I want to see her hold the belt for quite a while. You know, whoever it is, whether it's Sasha or whoever they're planning on having her eventually take it off, I want to see them chase it because, like you said, you know, she really, really cares about that belt. And I think that when a champion really, really cares about that belt, you make the opponent, the person wanting to get it, makes them want it even more. Like, I want that belt that you praise so much. And that's what Alexa is doing. And honestly, I am very happy that they're building this women's division around her because she has, you know, she has the charisma. Her skills are, you know, improving day by day, et cetera, et cetera. And I think she has what it takes. You know, yay to the tiny girls out there.
And I think it's always a smart booking decision to have the face chase the heel. That doesn't...
Well, also, you need somebody that can actually turn a Sasha Banks into a face. Sasha Banks has really not been in the same boat as Alexa Bliss in that she has not cared about her opponent necessarily. It has been about the gold and the gold alone, and only Alexa Bliss has been able to challenge her on that level. How bad do you want it? That is the constant taunting question. And we see now how far Alexa's able to push Sasha Banks, that she's able to jeopardize her health and well-being to just to make a point. Mm. The match was over. It was a 10-count victory, a cheap one at that. But it, the last moments of their time on television tonight was to prove a point. She wanted to prove to Alexa that this meant everything to her. There was no length she was not willing to go to, and she absolutely proved it by taking her the heck out.
Agreed. No shocker on the predictions front. 77.4% Alexa Bliss, 20.9% Sasha Banks, 1.9% other.
There ain't no shocker. Sasha won.
Right. Yep. Sasha was the winner.
Agreed.
Alexa retained.
Of course.
So it was an upset.
It was an upset victory. Yes.
Yeah. We're having a few of those tonight.
We definitely are. Moving right along to what many were probably hoping would be an upset victory. It's Dean Ambrose versus The Miz, complete with Miztourage. I'm just curious, who's E, who's Johnny, who's Ari? I just have questions about The Miztourage.
I watch wrestling.
Fair enough. These two have, like, I kind of said they were pretty much transplanted from SmackDown. The entire feud, complete with Intercontinental Championship. Just completely brought over from SmackDown to Raw, and did a good job of keeping it very, very fresh. Go on.
No, I don't think it's just fresh. I mean, I think it's okay. I mean, again, my big thing about the Superstar Shakeup was, like, I want to see new people face new people. I don't want to see the same feud that I saw back at, you know, early 2017, you know, 5 months later. You know, I think, especially kind of without the Renee effect. I think that kind of takes away the intrigue that initially it had on SmackDown. And I thought that's what made it, you know, a lot better. We saw some great promos on Talking Smack with Miz and Renee and Dean and whatnot. And, you know, we're not seeing them at all. We're seeing big boxes and teddy bears. You know, it's like, I don't really care about that. The match was good. I just thought the build-up was whatever.
I think if I were Dean Ambrose, I'd be concerned that the entire thing is built around The Miz. That Dean Ambrose just happens to be Miz's opponent.
To a degree, I can agree, but I will say that Dean Ambrose and The Miz are almost like mirroring images of each other. Mm. They perfectly are able to show what makes the other one special, because they almost are the same wrestler, but what drives them is completely different, and their execution is just a little bit different, but for the vast majority, they're the same guy in different clothes. But because they're opposed, they're literally coming from two different angles toward the same goal, it makes it really interesting for the audience. And the fact that Miz has surrounded himself by sycophants, but dangerous sycophants, they're all fairly well armed, makes him a prize on a hill. You got to climb up and climb up, and you've got to work hard to get to that golden, the golden palace on the top of the hill. But he just... Dean Ambrose was not able to do it tonight, though he tried, and he put up one of the best fights I've seen against four individuals as a solo man in a long time. He works really, really hard.
I always like The Miz in the ring because, similar to Alexa Bliss, where Alexa Bliss will just take a count out, Miz will straight up have 10 people on his side and bribe the referee. Like, he doesn't care. Like, He's outright okay with his lack of morals when it comes to winning the match.
He's the $1 million man.
Yeah.
You know, it's, like, it's the same thing of, there are no depths I'm not willing to sink to.
My biggest fear for Curtis Axel and Bo Dallas is, who was Miz's first, like, partner? John Morrison, no longer there. Mm. Who was next? Alex Riley, gone. Next, Damien Sandow, gone. So kind of hopefully, you know, Curtis Axel and Bo Dallas, they don't get that Miz curse, if you know what I mean. So
I didn't worry about this till right now. You're right.
So I just, you know, hopefully they, I mean, again, and the good thing about the Miz is he knows how to get people in his camp over. Let's just see, hopefully down the road, maybe if something were to happen where Axel and Dallas, you know, maybe become faces or whatever, you know, hopefully it just... It turns out good. And obviously, I'm sure there were behind-the-scenes politics that were going on with you know, Sandow and Riley. I don't know. I'm just guessing.
It was a pure athletic competition.
I'm guessing. But again, just, you know, the nerd in me that kind of noticed that not too long
also,
ago.
Also, although the nerd in me now sees it as well, and speaking of Great Balls of Fire, leaning into it, I would love if 6-8 months down the road when they're ready to break the Miz off from the three people behind him, or at least those two guys, that they get in front of it and lean into it and start talking about the Miz curse, and then they start fighting each other. It's like, I'm not going to sell you're... Like, you make the Miz curse a thing.
All three of them could easily cannibalize him. Just one bad night, they turn on him, and you never see him again. Tijuana's a dangerous place, you know.
So, going back to what you said, I did like the segments on Raw that they have, you know, leading towards this match. But, you know, for me, it's like, okay, I've seen it already, Dean Ambrose and The Miz. All right, it was a good match. It wasn't like, you know, too terrible. But I'm done. I'm good. I want to see them move on, though, for sure.
Yeah. I feel like we've said this before, where we're like, I'm ready for Miz to have another opponent. And then Dean Ambrose again.
Who is it? Who's it going to be? You gotta name names.
Kurt Hawkins.
All right. No. Who
I wouldn't
Kurt
be surprised
Hawkins?
If kind of Finn Balor kind of gets put in that IC title picture.
I'm a little shocked especially we didn't see Finn Balor at all tonight.
Especially because, like, he's not really doing anything in that Universal Championship picture. Obviously, he lost the Fatal 5-Way. He's not Roman Reigns, where he can just come out and say, I want to be champion. I'm going to face him at SummerSlam.
Not that attitude.
So, yeah, but let's put Finn Balor. Let's have him something. Let's see him be the workhorse. Or maybe even if Miz wins, you know, I wouldn't mind seeing Miz win. Just so it's something fresh, something new, you know, Finn versus The Miz.
Yeah, I want to see Finn definitely do something like for going towards the IC title because yeah, like he just got fell off of the Universal title, and it's like okay, well, where's Finn? Like Finn should be on the on the main card. Like what is happening here? Why wasn't he on the pay per view? You know, etc. There needs to be a spot for him, and I want to see him do something versus just you know the possibility of Elias Sampson. Like
I love
Elias Sampson, but I would like him. I would like Finn Balor. Higher on the card, and then Elias Sampson, maybe Elias Sampson beats down both Kurt Hawkins and Heath Slater at the exact same time. You want to make him look strong.
Finn Balor's injury, like any injury to a professional wrestler, caused him a lot of harm. But the harm is not as much physical as it is about timing. In professional wrestling, everything is always about timing. So when he got injured, it threw off everything they had planned for him. And as a result, they don't want to just bring him back and throw him into something that doesn't mean anything. So they're sort of trying to bide their time and bring him back when it matters the most. But unfortunately, it's the side effect of not knowing when that is. He has to sit on his hands and just wait for them to go, now's your chance. But until then, he just has to sit and I would be sulking. I'd be pissed. Jeez.
If assuming they didn't know what that plan... Like, that plan could be... It's going to be you, Nakamura, SummerSlam. It's going to be the only SmackDown vs. Raw match. And we're keeping you fresh for that match. And everyone on marquee value is going to want to see that match.
I mean, they need to start promoting... today,
yeah.
And they could treat it like a UFC match. They don't have any other matches, or they do their lower card opponents, just warm up matches, all leading to that. That would be interesting. Yeah. That'd be a good way to promote it, but
that would be
we're not there.
That would be a good way to make Finn Balor not sulk backstage. Like, what are they doing with me? Like, if they knew, like, no, this is what we're doing with you.
Yeah,
debut of the Demon against Shinsuke Nakamura. Maybe I don't know. Maybe that's just my keyboard warrior.
Well, where does Dean Ambrose go on an ice floe into the Arctic? Bring a coat, bye-bye.
I wouldn't be surprised if some point, you know, and I said it last time, they had a Raw show where they maybe in some way teased the Shield reunion, only for Dean Ambrose to turn heel to kind of, you know, did what Seth Rollins did, you know, at that time. And because I think it needs a little bit of refreshing as far as Dean Ambrose's character. He's been kind of a similar, you know, path in the last 3-4 years where, like, you know, maybe kind of time to freshen up. You know, obviously we saw any pre-WWE, you know, Dean Ambrose fan knows just how good of a heel he can be. Let's see. Obviously, he can't go that because it's PG, but let's see a little glimpse of that, you know, in the WWE stage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Speaking of which, only 7.5% thought it would be Dean Ambrose. 3.8% thought it would be some type of other. 88.7% The Miz.
I mean, he had all of the cards.
Literally all of the cards.
Yeah. He had four aces. It's hard to beat a man who is the house. Because the house always wins.
It's frustrating. Ambulance match. Braun Strowman, Roman Reigns. This was in the ring and in the arena. So much fun.
I loved everything about this, honestly. first of all, you know, I thought they had a nice match. You know, I thought it was so hilarious, though, when Roman Reigns speared himself into the ambulance. That was so unexpected. I was like, oh, my God, that is going to be a meme soon. Like, that's just so funny. And then even all the chaos that happened after that was just... I was marking out the whole entire time. I was like, this is awesome. This is great. I cannot believe this is happening. Blah, blah, blah. Kurt Angle's facial expression was hilarious when he came out. We saw Jamie Noble's... Braun Strowman's fate was in the hands of Jamie Noble at one point. It was just madness, and I loved it.
Also, I'm just thinking of that meme. It's an obvious slide into them DMs, like... And then it's Roman Reigns.
There you go. Now you have to make the meme. There you go. You have the idea.
Sure, it's already. Or he went onto the injured list, like. Yeah. It was a wild match, especially for the ending. I mean, you don't see Strowman. Strowman just. He has speed, but he's not quick. Reigns is obviously the quick one. He's able to move, he's able to dip and dodge, and that's that sort of setup for the entire surprise of nope. And it was over like that. No one saw it coming. Which it sort of set up for all of the events that happened. I mean, now Roman Reigns is a wanted man. He's probably wanted for attempted murder.
I was just talking about this on Twitter. It's premeditated.
Yeah, that moment you saw his face in the mirror. He's like, I'm doing it.
He had time to change his mind, essentially.
It was a moment of premeditation.
Could have just gotten out. Could have just gotten out.
Your Honor, I'd like you to pay $9.99 a month to watch my evidence.
That's funny. And another fantastic, amazing Roman Reigns match that the internet doesn't care about because they're just going to still boo him, obviously.
But
they're happy he lost. I'll guarantee you that.
We're supposed to boo him here. Like we're supposed to be on Braun Strowman's side.
Roman Reigns has turned the corner.
I think Strowman just because he's impressive.
Yeah, like, you're no longer the good guy.
Yeah. I mean, hopefully, because like I never understood the mentality of you want Roman Reigns to turn heel, but until then you're going to boo him. I just don't get that mentality. Like, that makes no sense at all. You know?
I can't speak for the Hive, but I can say I boo Roman Reigns because I genuinely have not liked the character for years.
But I'm saying most people are like, oh, I want him to turn heel, so I'm going to boo him instead. I'm like, wait, so...
But I don't have control.
Then I'm going to cheer for him when he turns heel.
Yeah.
Because that makes...
that just shows why, everything. But anyways, this match was just flat out, like, tremendous. Like, even going back to their match from Fastlane, where, like, had that visual of, like, Braun Strowman on, like, the top rope and just going for that elbow or whatever was going to, like, just another great match between those two. And obviously, like, on paper, you know, when that draft first started, you never would have thought that this match would have been, like, such great matches. And Strowman, who's probably the most improved guy in the last year, 2 years, like, holy crap, man. Like, this guy is just amazing.
And also as somebody who tended to represent that hive mind of, like, Roman Reigns haters, I want to commend the WWE for what they're doing with Roman Reigns and Braun Strowman. Because they made Braun Strowman into a former Wyatt to a main event monster player.
That was always their plan. You look at him. Just you can smell money just watching him walk by. It's impossible for him not to be what he is and what they've made him. Even if he started with the Wyatts, he is too big to be stuck in that small of a box. Literally, figuratively, whatever. He has to move on. And I think Roman Reigns is the perfect catalyst. Because Reigns thinks of himself as being the best. He says it in promos. He's like, hey, nobody can beat me in singles. And he just got beat. Just got beat and he lost it. He lost it in a big way. This is a guy who really... The more he wins, the more arrogant he becomes. And this is how a good man turns bad. He stops being humble. He starts thinking he's owed things. Mm-hmm. And a man who's standing in his way is now not perhaps his better, but a less than who got lucky, who deserves to be cut down. Mm. And I almost expected Strowman to kick open the door of that ambulance and be totally fine because that's what you expect from Braun Strowman, especially after he gets hit with a chair and just goes, no! But no, look, he's fallible, he's human, he bleeds, he was bleeding everywhere. This is what people sort of want to see but are afraid to see, is somebody so gargantuan, so impervious, who is now leveled to being on their level. He's human, after all.
I actually thought the same thing. I thought either A, he was surprisingly not going to be in there, or B, he was going to come out like when he came back on Raw, like, Braun!
He's not the Undertaker.
I was like, something crazy is going to happen. So when he came out, and like you said, acting like a real human, you know, bleeding and stuff like that. Again, I was surprised there was more blood. I was like, oh, wow. Like, you know, people are going to be like, oh, man, Braun, you know, blah, blah, blah. And where the heck is Roman Reigns, and why isn't he being punished?
Also, they needed the Jaws of Life and interrupt an entire match. However, Roman left the keys in the car, right?
Probably.
You probably could have just gotten in the driver's seat and just pulled it up like a full car length, and then.
No, I don't know.
Like, they didn't try that. Nobody thought of that.
It was probably a rear wheel drive vehicle, maybe not a four wheel, but a rear wheel. So if you crash it in rear first, it's going to mess with the axle, so it's obviously not going to be.
Plus, I think the back doors were so smushed in, and it wasn't been easy to.
Panel popped off. That was crazy. I didn't even know that could happen.
Also, while we're nitpicking Kurt Angle, don't tell everyone in the room to take their cell phones away if you have a camera that's streaming live.
Well, that's like
the
Staples Center or any arena that tells you not to film with your cell phone. Same thing.
That was funny, though. Honestly, that's hilarious.
I'm nitpicking. Predictions-wise, coin flip here. 52.9% Roman Reigns, 1.9% some type of other ending.
I was expecting Roman. I was. But I was also thinking that it was by a wider margin than that.
This was the tightest race of the night. 45.3% Braun Strowman. Those people were correct.
Well, this is the perfect example of, you know, how to get somebody to lose without looking weak at all.
Mm. And this is also a good way of how to build somebody against somebody like Roman Reigns. It's
He was the better man. He was the better man tonight, period. He was just... For 1 second, he was one step ahead. That's all he needed, and he won the match. The other guy couldn't handle it. He was good tonight, but hey, what are you going
to
say?
So while they were getting the Jaws of Life to get Braun Strowman out of that ambulance, there was a match, guys.
There was.
There was a match. It was Heath Slater and Curt Hawkins.
This proves in wrestling, you got to be ready to go all the time.
Yep.
You got to sit back there. You got to be in your gear. You got to be ready to go because you never know when some dude's going to take an ambulance, hijack it, and run it into your stuff, and they got to call the Air Force. If you noticed, it was the Air Force Fire Department they called to rescue this man. So, yeah. Get out there, kid. Show them what you got. You get that pay-per-view paycheck today.
Good for Heath Slater. He's got kids. He needs that pay-per-view paycheck. And if there was a winner's purse to this matchup, he would get that as well.
I think there has to be. I think we'll talk about it later.
Yeah, that's backstage stuff. But Heath Slater over.
We don't know how.
According
mystery.
According to JoJo, while we were watching Braun Strowman limp his way away from an ambulance. Could you imagine just like him checking into the hotel in Dallas tonight? Just blood on his.
Where did he go? That good point. Where did he go? I think he went to catering.
He went to the locker room.
He was probably looking around in that ambulance, going, "It's been a while since I've eaten. I better go eat." And then he went to catering.
They went to the locker room, grabbed his bag, got in his rental car, went to the hotel, never cleaned himself. Like, so, I think you need stitches. No, I'm good.
Yeah, sir. What name is your hotel room under? Braun.
So we're down to the main event of the evening. It is Samoa Joe going up against Brock Lesnar. This match was as promised.
I love the start of this match. I was like, yes, Samoa Joe did something that I never thought I would see. He made Brock Lesnar look like a rag doll. You know, he came in full force. He was like throwing him and all of it. It was great. I loved the start of this match. I did wish the match went a little bit longer because at the end I did feel a little bit like, what? That's it? No, I wanted it to keep going, you know?
I feel like you felt that way because Samoa Joe didn't win.
That could be the point. But the point is, I think, of course I wanted Samoa Joe to win, but I did want it to go a little bit longer, and I was also sad that Samoa Joe lost. So there you go.
It was a sudden ending. I'll give it that. But that it also speaks to the power that is Brock Lesnar. Once he hits that F5, it's a toss up to whether the guy's going to be able to get up or not. Some cases yes, some cases no. Samoa Joe, being a bigger guy, he takes it a little bit harder, and you could see Lesnar laboring to give him those German suplexes. Only 6 tonight. Because the fact that Joe is low, his center of gravity is very low, and it's hard to get a man like that over your head. It's a lot of effort. He's struggled to get Joe up onto his shoulders for that F5, but once it hit, Joe comes crashing down. He's heavy. It's a lot of weight right onto that face. Sometimes you don't come back.
And Samoa Joe had the jump on Brock Lesnar. Like, aside from Goldberg, when was the last time you could ever say somebody had any type of advantage over Brock Lesnar?
I think there are a lot of people who have an advantage over Brock Lesnar, but it doesn't always capitalize the way they hope it would or should. Obviously, Samoa Joe's a man with a plan. He was doing everything he was doing, creating all of this chaos around Brock Lesnar simply to throw him off balance, and it worked. Brock Lesnar became comfortable. He turned his back on his opponent. So what did Joe do? He did what 18 years in this business has taught him. He hit him. In the back, as hard as he could, put him through a table, and then was like, I'm ready to start now. We can go anytime.
Get him in here. Let's do this.
Let's go. Yeah. At your own pace.
Regardless of the length of the match, I think in no way, shape, or form did this make Samoa Joe look weak at all. That guy came in just like a force to be reckoned with. And even if you notice, like, after the match, a lot of people, or Michael Cole or Graves was like, yeah, he got caught.
Yeah.
This wasn't like, oh, man, like, Samoa Joe got defeated by Brock Lesnar, you know, because of whatever. No, he got caught. It's that simple, you know? And it kind of still makes him look so much strong where it's like, yeah, I think on any given time, he did have his number. He did have Brock Lesnar's number. He just got caught.
Also, do you want to know who's going to be on Raw tomorrow night? Samoa Joe. Do you want to know who isn't going to be on Raw tomorrow night? Brock Lesnar. So do you want to know who's going to be the baddest MF-er on Raw tomorrow night?
Samoa Joe. Yeah.
Like, they handle the traveling world champion, if you will, of Brock Lesnar very well, because they make...
I guess travel to Minnesota is a big deal now. I don't know.
It's a real big deal. You get Brock Lesnar out. Brock Lesnar just doesn't come to every city and every show. Like, he...
Cell phones don't work up at this place. I know that for sure. You have to go with a note in hand.
You have to send a person.
Yeah, a courier.
You have to send a courier to ask him if he wants to participate in Great Balls of Fire. But this makes Samoa Joe look great. And if Samoa Joe looks great tomorrow night, if Seth Rollins steps to Samoa Joe, let's say, now we have a match.
If you're going to get beat by somebody, let it be Brock Lesnar.
Yeah.
You can still beat anybody else, arguably, but you got beat by Brock Lesnar, so that makes you the second baddest man on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
Not a bad thing to be.
Especially since in the last month or so, he's beaten Roman Reigns in a match. He won that Fatal 5-Way Extreme Rules match. Like, Samoa Joe, like, he's gone through everything he needed to go through. Like, he's been built like a freaking machine the last month or so. So yeah,
he's like literally built like a machine, though.
Yeah, so pretty much like, oh, and you lost to Brock Lesnar? Okay, like, nothing wrong with losing to Brock Lesnar.
Not only that, he dominated like more than half the match.
It's not
so...
like he got Dean Ambrose by Brock Lesnar, you know? That's something different.
But even then, I'd argue Dean Ambrose didn't look terrible. That because you got to get to
Dean
get
Ambrose is a survivor. Mm-hmm. That's different. Dean Ambrose is the cockroach that is left after the nuclear explosion.
Although that was the word Michael Cole used to describe Brock Lesnar at the end of this match, a survivor. Brock Lesnar survived this
Brock
match.
Brock Lesnar survived. Which, you can see, he was a deep shade of purple. Like, which I would call an eggplant.
That makes Samoa Joe look really strong. All the people who are complaining on the internet are complaining because they wanted Samoa Joe to win.
Sure.
He will.
He deserved to win. He works his ass off. But some nights, you just can't win. It's about who's good on the given night. And tonight, Brock Lesnar was better. That much better. But that's all it takes sometimes.
And Samoa Joe will probably have to wait till August to maybe get to face him again.
Yeah.
We don't know for
maybe
sure.
Maybe SummerSlam.
I think if anything, if Roman beats Brock at SummerSlam, I think it sets up for a Samoa Joe match to get another shot because now you have Samoa Joe. He was beaten Roman Reigns twice in the last 6 months. So I think it sets up perfectly for maybe post-Brock Lesnar.
well, in a quick, very brief round of, like, future thinking, we'll call it, we think that's where we're going. We think we're moving towards a Roman Brock.
Wasn't that what it was announced? Roman came out and says, I'm fighting Brock Lesnar.
He said that, but, like, that...
Well, nobody said that,
but
no.
Then but then Braun came out, and then he lost the match to Braun. Like,
but he almost killed
that was because that was his SummerSlam plans. He wasn't saying, oh, here are my Great Balls of Fire plans. Here's my SummerSlam plans.
Okay.
I think he'd still have opposition.
If Kurt Angle has any real sway as a manager of anything, if you were a manager of Dairy Queen, and one of your employees tried to kill the other one in the establishment, you wouldn't let them get a raise. That's how the world works. So I hope Kurt Angle is holding this place to some kind of standard. And no matter what says, hey, you're not getting a title shot for at least like 6 months.
Or, hey, you don't just get a title shot. You have to win the next 3 weeks.
Right. You didn't even beat him. You beat him to death. You didn't beat him.
Well, you have to win matches if you want to win matches. Again. Like, but I'm excited for the Raw side. Moving forward to SummerSlam. Because SummerSlam is the next pay-per-view for the Raw side. Battleground in my home city, Philadelphia. That'll be the next one for SmackDown Live. And real excited for all of it. Also, 15.1% Samoa Joe, 5.7% some type of no contest, 79.2% Brock Lesnar. Huge favorite.
Really, nobody thought that highly of Samoa Joe.
And the betting lines by bell time were something stupid, like -2,000 for Brock Lesnar.
Well.
Oh, my God.
Oh, well.
It's... So, do you guys have any departing words about this pay-per-view? Anything you're looking forward to moving forward with any of these guys?
I do want to see Samoa Joe and Brock Lesnar again sometime. Because, like I said, they're both awesome, and they're both badasses, and I love the way Samoa Joe dominated most of the match, and I would like to see that again. And I like both of these guys, so definitely.
I'm looking forward to more stuff with Alexa Bliss, whether it's going to be Alexa Bliss, Sasha Banks again, or whether it's just going to be Alexa Bliss moving on to the next competitor. Just on to the next one. I'm really looking forward to that. I'm really looking forward to whatever they're going to do with Finn Balor.
Oh, yeah.
Because I think he's someone who's, like... I think we can officially say, now that we're watching a main roster show, that he's healthy and they're not using him, that we can officially say they're underutilizing him. Or they've at least underutilized him tonight. That
arguably.
We don't know their grand plan.
Right.
If the grand plan is him and Nakamura, I'm okay with not seeing him until that match.
Well, that won't be for a while, though.
Yeah.
For a long time. I think they're going to keep everything very strictly Raw on SmackDown. But like I said, I thought it was an overall great pay-per-view. I think it delivered a lot better than what I thought it would be. I do miss Bad Blood, but I don't know. I thought that was kind of a boring title. Anyways, I'm kind of curious if this is going to be a yearly occurrence for the Great Balls of Fire. Can we look forward to the Great Balls of Fire 2 next year?
The legacy of Great Balls of Fire.
Yeah, I mean... This was the first ever Great Balls of Fire pay-per-view. I feel privileged to have seen it firsthand. And I think this sets a really high bar. With balls this great, next year's balls have got to be better, right? I hope next year's balls are better. It's the only reason I did this show.
To bigger, better balls
so I get to say,
as the years go
I
by.
I get to say balls as many times as I want. Balls.
Also, I've been talking about the percents all night. I will now announce the AfterBuzz TV predictions champion. He had 17 of the 20 possible points. It is Adam X Parsons. He is your AfterBuzz TV predictions champion.
Golf clap.
Golf clap. Golf clap. Congratulations.
Slow clap.
Now, what is that? We'll be tweeting about it. It's a contest. There are prizes. In the meantime, starting with George Hermosa, where can the people find you on Twitter?
On Twitter, they can find me at GHERMOZA, G Hermosa, not just Twitter, but also Instagram and MySpace.
MySpace?
MySpace.
Did you find your login to MySpace?
No. But you can follow me there anyways. I just don't know the login to accept your friend request.
You have to accept that now?
Well, no, MySpace you did.
What?
And if you play your cards rightly, correctly, top 8.
Listen, I am probably the most active hobo on social media. Not even I have a MySpace. I feel left out or ahead of the curve. Either way, at True Hobo on Twitter. I do Raw now. I've been doing NXT. I think that's the superior show. I'm willing to fight all y'all about it. And if you want to buy one of my shirts, you go to nxteam.spreadshirt.com to go get one of those and support your favorite homeless wrestler.
Awesome. Okay, so watch me on X-Pac 12360. Don't miss that on Wednesdays at 3 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And you can follow me on Instagram and on Twitter at underscore Denise Salcedo.
And I'm Steve Kaufman on Twitter at Steve Kaufman. That's K-A-U-F-M-A-N-N. I am in week 5 of what I'm calling the sober year. It's thesoberyear.com, in which I will not be drinking for 52 weeks, birthday to birthday. I'm leaving town starting tomorrow. I'm headed over to Orlando, Florida for the Mae Young Classic. So if anyone's in town, reach out to me on Twitter. I'll be doing that. Otherwise, buzz you later.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
See you later.
Later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.